This is a pretty good service here, this size service on New Year's Eve. I think it's wonderful. I think it's wonderful that you all are going to be able to hear Ananda Forrest. He is a substitute for Arthur Blue, who was supposed to speak here, but he got all of his shots because he's going to India, and it just left him totally wiped out. So Ananda is pitching in.
Well, first, thank you so much for having me here today. And I'm so disappointed. I think when your man was talking about bad news, the bad news for me is that Arthur's not speaking today. Because as we know, he's a master speaker, master storyteller, and has led an incredible journey. And the connections between him and St. Francis are obvious to anyone who knows him, but it would have been lovely to hear him. So I promise I will include St. Francis in this talk, but thank you for your patience, because I was very excited to be hearing him today. Because first of all, Arthur is who introduced my wife and me to celebrations. We wouldn't be here, we wouldn't have heard of it without him. And the joy of that, which is why we keep coming back, is really what I want to talk about. And again, as Elsie said, what a beautiful service. I mean, the theme, what such a beautiful theme with the speakers, the readings, the song, this theme of joy. And to me, joy is the whole point. I'm here for the joy. And in Diane's reading, the sun, I mean, what could be a fuller expression of joy than the sun? I mean, it's just relentlessly pouring out light. And the funny thing is, we think we know the sun. But if you do just a little bit of math, the sun's up there about the size of a dime or a quarter, depending where you are in the world. But we're 93 million miles from the sun. So at the very moment the sun is hitting our eyeballs, there's actually a sphere of light with a 93 million mile radius that we are experiencing on our little tiny 8,000 mile diameter planet and our little inch wide eyeballs. So you can't even make sense of that, but imagine a sphere with a 186 million mile diameter, right? What is the surface area of that? We're experiencing a fraction that's so small, it's beyond comprehension. And yet if we look at it for 2 or 3 minutes, it burns out our eyeballs. And everything on the planet is solar powered, right? The wind, the rain, all the plants that we eat, all the animals, oil, which if you were having a Rube Goldberg type competition, let's have all the kids get together. What's the most inefficient way you can think of to get energy from the sun? First, you need several million years of blue-green algae, photosynthesizing, dropping to the sea, dropping to the bottom, like dust. You know when you go away for a couple of weeks, there's a little dust in your house? Imagine if you went away from your house for 5 or 6 million years. There's thousands of feet of dust, and the dust is so heavy, it's crushing itself down. So this is millions and millions of years, all that blue-green algae, all that sediment. And then it has to be covered with just the right amount of rocks and stone. If it's too many thousands of feet, too much pressure, you'll never get to it. Leave that alone. And then you dig into it, and up comes this incredibly toxic substance that you have to process. And look, that everybody who touches it becomes monstrous. What oil tycoon do you know that has a heart? It poisons everything it touches. It poisons. And we're fighting and dying, and that's how we get our sunlight. I mean, that's insane. And our descendants will look at us. My favorite line from Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the movie: does the word duh mean anything to you? The trees, they're just quietly waving their solar collectors. So the good news is this is a brief, awkward, very dark moment that we're living in. And that's one reason why this is such a powerful time of year. Because the light shines even more brightly than at any other time of year in this darkness. And that's what I love about celebrations. It's like the blind men and the elephant. That's the whole story of the world. I know the front left leg. Ken knows one of the ears. Elsie knows the tail. And we each know it. But when we start describing that to each other, they're different. And we can get upset. In fact, if we just step back, each person has got a snapshot of a greater whole. And when we put them together, we begin to get a sense of what the truth is. And I love that celebration celebrates that openness. And if you look at the holidays, winter solstice, that's the pagans, and there's the Christians on Christmas, and then there's the partiers on New Year's Eve, and then there's the hardcore Christians celebrating Epiphany on January 6th. But they're all exactly the same holiday. It's about light coming back in the darkest time of the year. The solstice, right? The sun returning, Christmas. the sun being born. Tonight, the new year coming, Epiphany, seeing this incredible light that is ultimately reflecting the light, as Saul said, that we carry in ourselves, that a moment of awareness. And it's all the same holiday. And it's celebrated over and over again because this is such a dark time of year. And of course, we're in such a dark time on the planet right now. It can look pretty hopeless. We don't do Easter four times. We don't do Thanksgiving four times. But we need to celebrate this returning of the light four different times over this period, because we need to remember in the darkest times, the light shines the brightest. And it can be hard to feel that. What's going on in Israel? What's going on in Washington? What's going on in the economy? What might be going on in your own heart? The crises that so many people are facing. So I just wanted to share a tiny bit about my journey with joy. And it started at a very dark time in my life. I just graduated from law school, which I hated, and I had no idea what to do with the rest of my life. And my grandmother, who was a mentor for me, had me watch Joseph Campbell's The Power of Myth. Remember on PBS, that documentary that came out? And we were watching just the first episode, and I knew a little about Joseph Campbell from my grandmother. And he's talking along about how if you follow your bliss, doors will open for you that wouldn't have opened for anyone else. You know, you couldn't rewind stuff in those days. It's TV, it's coming, it's going. But my grandmother and I both looked away from the screen. We looked at each other. We'd never heard that before. And it was just like this revelation. But it took me another 7 years to realize that those are instructions for life, that we must follow our bliss. Our bliss is the most important thing. And it doesn't mean forgetting about our kids or not taking responsibility. It just means honoring our joy as one of the most, if not the most important thing in our life. And I followed that for many, many years. And a few years ago, right when I turned 60, which was a big pivotal turning point, it can be a little dark, like I'm approaching mortality, what have I accomplished? But my brother, who's a very gifted writer, I'll put a little plug in, he just wrote a book called Fire Weather, which is an amazing kind of dark book about global warming, but it won a bunch of prizes. So he's a writer, he has a writer's idea. And one thing my dad did for us is he introduced us to the woods, the White Mountains in New Hampshire. So that was my church, those mountains. But now he's in his late 80s. He's got Parkinson's. He's got NPH, water on the brain, weird, wacky, and wet. He's not doing too well. But my brother says, let's go out to California where he lives and take him to Yosemite for a few days. And we're going to stay in a really nice hotel there. And we'll just do short walks. We'll push him in a wheelchair if necessary. But that's what he gave us, that gift of appreciating nature. So we flew out to L.A. And the problem was, the complication was, his wife's mother died about a week beforehand. And his wife had to go to Minnesota for my father's mother-in-law's funeral. But my dad at that point, his memory's not good. He's falling down. He's pissing himself. He's not necessarily going to be a lot of help to his much younger wife in Minnesota at a funeral. So she agrees to let us take him to Yosemite while she goes to Minnesota. It was a bad judgment. But anyway, so we have an amazing time in Yosemite. It's like he came back to life in the mountains there. And he wound up walking 4 miles on the third day. Only fell down once, but he walked 4 miles. We could see the power, and it was so beautiful. But as we're driving back to L.A., we begin to feel there's a darker cloud on the horizon, which is that his wife, while she's in Minnesota, starts to resent that he's having fun with his sons, that she's getting angrier and angrier. And we're saying, oh, Dad, bring her some flowers, you know, da, da, da. We have no idea what we're getting into. So we get back to L.A. She's gone to bed. And my brother, who always slips out of trouble, gets up at 4 a.m. to catch a flight. So he's gone. So I wake up. But right before I wake up, I'm having this sort of vision. And the vision is I see this really beautiful presence next to someone in complete despair, like one of those Samaritan ads. And what I'm hearing is, no matter how miserable you are, no matter how dire your situation is, no matter how unhappy you are always in the presence of this incredibly loving, kind, beneficent being. It's like in the poem Footstep. That presence is always with you. In fact, it's your true nature. So I thought, that's a beautiful insight, beautiful image. I'll have to remember that. And I'm having my coffee, and life is looking pretty good. And then my dad beckons to me and says, come back to the room. You've got to leave. And keep in mind, I don't make much money. I'm an adjunct instructor at a community college. So flying out to California is a big, big budget item. And I was out there. I was going to stay for another 2 or 3 days because this might be the last time I get to spend time with my dad. And he's telling me, you have to go now. It's about 8 in the morning. So within 2 minutes, there's a Lyft cab taking me to the airport. My flight's not for 48 more hours. So I'm going to be spending 2 days at LAX. And it's just like, WTF, what's going on here? This is outrageous. I've never been thrown out. I've done some bad things, but I've never been thrown out. So anyway, I'm riding in the car, and I didn't want to talk to the driver. And I'm saying, please put the radio on. And instead of putting the radio on, he looks me in the rearview mirror, and he goes, are you a musician? Yeah. I used to play the electric bass. I mean, my good manners are kicking in. I didn't want to talk to anybody. I said, are you a musician? And he goes, yes, I play the Persian drum. And I'm, Persian drum? I said, you from Persia? Yeah. He said, I came in 1978 or 79, right? So there's a huge download with that. So there's a silence. And then I say, you know, if we hadn't gotten all involved in the 50s in killing Mossadegh, your country wouldn't be in the mess that it's in today. And I'm just really sorry for that. There's a long pause, and he looked at these huge brown eyes, and he goes, why do you think people behave like that? And I was like, that's a big question. But I'm remembering, I teach Native American history, and there's this famous line attributed to Cortez. When the Spanish arrived, they were the power of gods, but they were obsessed with gold. And the Aztecs liked gold. It was soft. It was shiny. Made pretty things. But the Spanish were insane for it. And Montezuma says, what is up with you and gold? And Cortez supposedly said, we have a disease of the heart, and gold seemeth to heal it. And it's like that error. That's the whole story right there. So I shared that story with him. And there's a long pause. And it's starting to get a little weird in the car now. I don't know this guy. Is he Mexican? Now I know he's Persian. I know that now. But it's like, I'm just trying to get to my misery in the airport. And he's going, do you think there's a cure for that disease? And I said, yeah, I do. I love. And he smiled and said, yes, in Persia, we had many great doctors for that disease. You've heard of Rumi, have you? And this is where St. Francis comes in, because St. Francis and Rumi lived at exactly the same time. In fact, we just know for a fact they were traveling in the Holy Land at the same time. It is possible that St. Francis and Rumi passed by each other. They could have had a conversation. And when you look at the messages they each carry, they're so similar. But I'm just going to stick with Rumi right now. And I said, well, you know, my favorite passage from Rumi is this quote. And I shared this quote. It's sort of bizarre. Here I am, like, this guy can read Rumi in the original, and I'm American sharing with him a translation. Rain fell on one man, and he ran inside his house. But the swan spread his wings and said, pour more on me of that power I am fashioned from. And he just laughed. He said, write it down. I've never heard that before. So he drops me off at the airport, and I'm reading this biography of St. Francis. You want to know how to become St. Francis? You just got to trust the instructions you're given. They had a thing back then called bibliomancy, and I call it book divination. You open a book, you got a question. I don't know how to answer. Open the book, stick your finger in, read the paragraph, there's your answer. They did that a lot in the Middle Ages. And St. Francis was a young man. What am I going to do with my life, right? Question we can all ask all the time. He did bibliomancy, and he got the message where Jesus says, give all your possessions to the poor and follow me. He goes, that's a tough one, because, you know, he's from a pretty rich family. Opens it up again, same passage. Opens it up a third time, it's another gospel, but it's the same exact quote. So he did. And that's the simple story of how to become St. Francis, right? Just give it all away to the poor and follow Jesus, follow Christ. So I'm reading the biography, and it's a famous conversation that Francis has with one of his disciples, and they're on the way to the Church of Mary of the Angels, which is where Los Angeles gets its name. And St. Francis is just riffing on, you know, even if all the blind in this country and all that were made to see and the deaf could hear and the lame could walk, that would not be perfect joy. And then he said, if all the heathens, if all the Saracens and all the Moors converted to Christianity, that would not be perfect joy. And they're trudging along through the snow. And his fellow gets a little kind of tired of this ridiculous amount of joy, says, well, what would be perfect joy? And St. Francis says, well, if we get to the monastery where we're going right now, and the porter takes one look at us and throws us out and tells us we're imposters and throws rocks and stones at us, that would be perfect joy. And his friend goes, what are you talking about? How could that possibly? Because that's God's will for us. And whatever God's will for us is perfect joy. And at that point, I put the book down because, of course, I've just been thrown out of a place where I expected to have warm welcome. What does Mark Twain says? Home is where they have to take you in. Here's my own flesh and blood. Throw me out the door. Wow. So that was my 2 days in the airport sitting with the perfect joy. Fast forward. I met Amma, the hugging saint. She's got an ashram up there in the hills. I spoke about her when you graciously allowed me to speak last May. My wife and I moved to her ashram this summer. That's what brought us to Santa Fe. We didn't come here for celebration. We came here for Amma. But as Michael Harner, one of my shamanic teachers, said, religion is spirituality plus politics. And the problem is, once you start having bricks and mortar and you have a structure and you have a hierarchy, you've got politics. So the problem was, when Ishana and I and Arthur and another friend of ours arrived, imagine four golden retrievers arriving at a cat's tea party. These ridiculous, extravagant extroverts who are so enthusiastic, our tails are clearing off the table, busting into this quiet congregation of cats. And it didn't take but a couple of months before we were accused of trying to take over the ashram, and they had no protocol for dispute resolution, so we were just supposed to pray. And praying is great, but it's no substitute for talking to the person you're having an issue with. And so we had to leave. So all of a sudden, early November, we're entering the darkest time of the year. We have no place to live. We came out here to live at the ashram. And suddenly we're bumped out. And of course, I'm thinking about all the pretty words I just shared with you. No matter how bad your situation is, there's a benevolent presence with you. Blah, blah. Swan spreading his wings. Perfect joy. We got to find a place to live. So my wife is quick on the uptake. Pretty soon we're pet sitting. And we're living in the van in RV parks and 6 inches of snow. But the amazing thing that happened here at Celebration, which I hadn't even meant to come to, I just came down here with Arthur, I met Joan. And now I'm doing this transformational coaching work with her. And I met Jeff, who's not here because he's following his bliss, right? His sweetheart in Wyoming. But we made an amazing connection with him. We've been out to the Rio Grande Refuge, working on the treehouse. We're all in up there. And then, of course, Bianca Franchi from New Jersey, she comes here occasionally. Remember, she put out that call for someone to rent. We're living in her casita. So in the darkest time of year, and it wasn't that Amma betrayed us, but we went there hoping for Amma's love, and we met, surprise, surprise, other people. What can you do? And we couldn't resolve the issues, and we were the newcomers, so we had to go. And that was a real painful, dark moment. And yet, as I look over the last 2 months, the light that I've received in this darkest time of year from Joan, from Jeff, from Bianca, from all of you, inviting me to speak, which is my greatest joy. So I just want to thank you so much. Thank Arthur for bringing me down here. Thank Arthur for creating the space for me to speak. And I look forward to hearing his story about St. Francis. But perfect joy, that's it. I find it here. So.